This is a recording of Progressing Through the Gradations of Holiness in the Temple, 2 Nephi 4, 32-35, as a hymn inspired by ritual by Nelson Chung, published in Interpreter, a journal of Latter-day Saint faith and scholarship, read by the author. Progressing Through Gradations of Holiness in the Temple, 2 Nephi chapter 4, verses 32-35, as a hymn inspired by ritual. Abstract. Sidney Sperry identified 2 Nephi 4, 15-35 as, quote-unquote, Nephi's psalm. Using form critical analysis, Matthew Nickerson classified it as a personal lament psalm. In this article, I build on biblical turns of phrase, imagery, symbolism, and the archaeological record established by previous scholarship to demonstrate how verses 32-35 constitute Nephi's movement through gradations of increasing holiness in the temple. Nephi's movement also exemplifies the use of thematic and rhetorical intensification, a method used by biblical poets. The ordered presentation of temple elements through those four verses suggest intentional artistry rather than random borrowing. Nephi's psalm, comprising 2 Nephi chapter 4, verses 15-35, occupies a prominent place in the Latter-day Saint tradition. Mission presence often recommended to missionaries in times of trial. The Book of Mormon Institute manual describes it as an open quote, inspired poem or hymn, close quote, that contains Nephi's, quote, heartfelt pleadings, close quote, and encourages the student to vocalize it. John Hilton III proposed that although the biblical psalms were likely absent from the brass plates, Nephi would have been familiar with them through his experience with the Jerusalem temple. If the temple provided Nephi's connection to the psalms, one should not be surprised to find temple imagery when he penned his own psalm in 2 Nephi 4:15-35, shortly after his father's death. The psalm's final four verses reflect precisely this influence, tracing a progression through the temple's increasing degrees of holiness. The depiction of the escalation in holiness associated with the passage through the temple represents intensification, a rhetorical technique of biblical poets. Sidney Sperry first coined the term Psalm of Nephi in 1947. Using form critical analysis, Matthew Nickerson identified Nephi's psalm as an individual lament because it included the essential elements, invocation, complaint, confession of trust, petition, and vow of praise. In this article, I first considered the question of what a psalm is, then identify key markers of intensification, review previous works on the temple setting of Nephi's psalm, and finally trace Nephi's poetic progression through the temple grounds. What is a psalm? Psalms were not merely beautiful expressions. They could also be sung. The Greek word psalmos denotes a song sung to a plucked instrument. In early Judaism, Psalms were understood to be largely King David's responses to life events. By the early 20th century, Hermann Gunkel had begun categorizing Psalms into different genres. Gunkel, the founder of form criticism, was interested in identifying genres so he could understand the settings that produced the texts. Setting is also key to understanding Nephi's psalm. Gunkel made a higher level division by separating psalms into liturgical poetry relating to public worship and non-liturgical spiritual songs. Gunkel went so far as to argue that, quote, very many of the psalms which have come down to us do not belong to the poetry of the cult, close quote. Sigmund Mowinkel, one of Gunkel's students, entered the conversation in the 1930s by focusing on what he believed were the festival and temple settings underlying all psalms. Psalme also means, quote, hymn in his native Norwegian, and as he pointed out, the Hebrew word for the canonical book of Psalms, Tehillim, means, quote, cultic ritualistic songs of praise, close quote. Mowinkel grounded his argument in the origin of religious poems in temple worship and even tried to reverse engineer festivals from the Psalms. Mowinkel broke decisively with his mentor on this point. Prayers also share a close relationship with Psalms. Gunkel believed many later psalms did not contain the prayer form, but, quote, consist entirely of pious reflections, close quote. Some may infer that Gunkel meant nearly all early psalms served as cultic prayers. Mowinkel maintained that while prayer, normally a petition to a powerful, willing, and personally acting God, predates formal worship, in this instance, quote, the natural form of the cultic prayer is the psalm, close quote. Almost 100 years later, the literary scholar Robert Alter sided with Gunkel. Quote, many, but by no means all the psalms were composed for use in the temple cult. Close quote. For Alter, what unites all psalms is not their function as temple ritual, but their character as poems derived from a, quote, deep and often passionate faith, close quote. Alter likely had in mind the rhetorical studies of Walter Brueggemann, who acknowledged that this, quote, faithful speech encompasses the full range of faith, quote, from profound praise to the utterance of unspeakable anger and doubt, close quote. More recently, the pendulum has swung again as biblical scholars have shifted from their near-exclusive focus on Israelite history to the study of worship in the Bible, once again renewing interest in the Psalms' quote, liturgical function. Nickerson's identification of Nephi's psalm as an individual lament used Gunkel's more detailed framework. However, I argue that relying on Gunkel's classification scheme to understand 2 Nephi 4 as entirely non-liturgical undervalues the cultic imagery and experience evident in Nephi's psalm. Intensification. The essence of both biblical poetry is parallelism, in which the same idea is expressed in different ways. Alter asserted that within this genre, quote, psalms is one of the one set of texts whose poetic status has been most strongly felt throughout the generations, close quote. He illustrated how biblical writers deployed the poetic medium to give their messages greater weight. He further explained, while describing prophetic poetry, that since poetry is the most elevated form of human speech, it was often thought that divine speech should therefore be presented in such a format. Parallelism often includes a technique used by biblical scholars known as intensification. Perhaps the best known example of this method among Latter-day Saints is Isaiah's warning of the impending Assyrian invasion, quoted in 2 Nephi 20, as towns progressively closer to Jerusalem fall before the advancing foreign army. Alter analyzed the intensification in Psalm 13, which expresses a lament over escalating abandonment, but abruptly turns to trust in Yahweh in the final verses. He also examined Amos 8, 9-10, a prophecy of intensifying grief that moves from the periphery of human experience to its center, from light being turned into darkness, the world, to festivals being turned into mourning, human institutions, to sackcloth and a shaved head, outward manifestations of grief, to mourning for the loss of an only son, inward pain. Previous research on the temple setting of Nephi's psalm. That the temple aspect of Nephi's psalm is easily overlooked is underscored by a statement from Hugh Nibley, who argued that because, quote, a psalm is a ritual hymn connected with the rites of the temple, unquote, quote, Nephi's psalm is no psalm at all. Nibley's reflexive dismissal echoed Mowinkel, who, as noted above, originated the idea that all psalms were exclusively cultic hymns. Ironically, Nibley classified Nephi's psalm as a thanksgiving hymn, although, according to Gunkel, the roots of the Thanksgiving hymn, quote, reach down into the cult, close quote. It seems you can take the psalm out of the temple, but it is harder to take the temple out of the psalm. More recent scholarship has sought to uncover temple themes in Nephi's psalm. Kenneth Alford and Bryce Baker observed parallels between 2 Nephi 4, 16-35, and Psalms 25-31. Scripture Central, a website that popularizes scholarship on Latter-day Saint scriptures, linked those similarities to Peter Craigie's argument based on their central theme of trust. Psalms 25 and 28 have a covenant-making context. The Scripture Central article concluded that Nephi's psalm, with its dedication of allegiance to the Lord and reliance on his salvation, incorporates, quote, themes of temple and covenant. Additionally, David Bakavoy noted that 2 Nephi 4, 32-35 described priestly screening activity at temple gates. Building on these insights, I explored the temple's physical organization as depicted in the closing verses of Nephi's psalm, deepening our appreciation of both the themes and Nephi's artistry. I demonstrate that 2 Nephi 4, 32-35 embeds cultic elements within the personal lament, and that these verses are best understood as explicitly reflecting Nephi's progression through the gradations of holiness symbolized in the temple setting. To that end, I build on biblical idioms, imagery, typology, and archaeological attestations uncovered by previous research to trace Nephi's movement through the temple. The material I present does not establish whether these verses were composed for use in the temple. Rather, if one examines the song for its context, function, and purpose, one can infer a context of temple worship. Recognition of the temple themes allows the reader to more fully appreciate the rich meaning of Nephi's song. Nephi's ritual-themed song. The closing verses of Nephi's song trace a progression through increasingly sacred temple space. Beginning at the gates, Nephi moves inward through imagery associated with admission, covenant, and priestly clothing before his prayer culminates in an ascent toward God in the Holy of Holies. The following analysis traces this progression through the temple imagery of verses 32 to 35. The gates of righteousness. Nephi turns to imagery of temple worship as he seeks the Lord's presence in his psalm. 2 Nephi 4:32 invites us to consider Nephi's walk through the temple beginning at the gate. May the gates of hell be shut continually before me, because that my heart is broken and my spirit is contrite. O Lord, will thou not shut the gates of thy righteousness before me, that I may walk in the path of the low valley, that I may be strict in the plain road? Here Nephi contrasts gates of hell, Shadai Sheol, Isaiah 38:10, with gates of righteousness, Shadai Tzedek, Psalm 118:19. Roman Catholic scholar Stephen Smith emphasized that the layout of the temple symbolizes different realms. The Holy of Holies signifies heaven. The holy place corresponds to the Garden of Eden, and the outer court represents Sheol. When this typology is coupled with the widely accepted interpretation among Bible scholars that the gates of righteousness refer to gates separating the outer court from the inner parts of the temple, and that these gates often serve as a synecdoche for the temple as a whole, a clearer picture emerges. In this light, Nephi's plea for the Lord to shut the gates of hell and open the gates of righteousness can be understood as his yearning to leave the outer court and enter the holy place, drawing nearer to God's presence. Furthermore, Nephi is presenting himself as worthy of entry. Levite gatekeepers stood between the outer and inner courts of the temple to assess the righteousness of those seeking entry. The Hebrew Bible depicts this process in gate liturgies. The psalmist cries, "Open to me the gates of the righteousness, that I may enter through them and give thanks to the Lord. This is the gate of the Lord. The righteous shall enter through it." Psalm 118:19-20, ESV. Additionally, "Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart." Psalm 24:3-4. Thus, when Nephi utters, "May the gates of hell be shut continually before me, because that my heart is broken and my spirit is contrite," he is stating his qualifications for entering the sanctuary, the inner court from the outer court, substituting an inversion of Psalm 51:17, consistent with Sido's law. As David Bakavoy asserts, Nephi declared that as a result of his broken heart and contrite spirit, the Lord could rightfully open the temple gates, encircle Nephi in the sacred robe of righteousness, and allow Nephi access to the heavenly realm. The reason for Nephi's precise formulation is Christological, as explained shortly. The robe of righteousness. Nephi continues, "O Lord, wilt thou encircle me around in the robe of thy righteousness?" 2 Nephi 4:33. Bakavoy and Twetton is perceived that in both the Hebrew Bible and the Book of Mormon, clothing carries symbolic value. More specifically, the robe of righteousness, Isaiah 61:10, represents covenant making. Nephi's inclusion of that phrase lends additional support to the claim made by Scripture Central that he wrote it in a covenant context. Importantly, the reader can also visualize Nephi donning a priestly robe as part of his progression within the temple. A chamber in the inner court adjacent to the holy place allowed priests to change into and out of their priestly garments, as attested by Ezekiel's vision. "When the priests enter the holy place, they shall not go out of it into the outer court without laying there the garments in which they minister, for these are holy. They shall put on other garments before they go near to that which is for the people." Ezekiel 42:14, ESV. Nephi's enrobing indicates that he has reached the inner court. The parallelism emphasizes not only the place of the temple, but also the nature of the temple covenants. One should note that in verses 32 and 33, Nephi inserts the word thy, transforming gates of righteousness into gates of thy righteousness, and robe of righteousness into robe of thy righteousness. This move harmonizes these phrases with a recurring theme in 2 Nephi. Humankind is redeemed by Christ's righteousness. Representative passages include, thou art redeemed because of the righteousness of thy Redeemer, 2 Nephi 2:3. There is no flesh that can dwell in the presence of God, save it be through the merits, mercy, and grace of the Holy Messiah, 2 Nephi 2:8. And rely wholly upon the merits of him who is mighty to save, 2 Nephi 31:19. Accordingly, Nephi reworks the expressions from Psalms and Isaiah about righteousness and requirements for entry and imbues them with Christological significance. He portrays the temple as a physical manifestation of Christ's personal and interactions with him, and Christ as the only way through which he can be considered righteous. Additionally, the phrase, that I may walk in the path of the low valley, that I may be stricken in the plain road, 2 Nephi 4:32, teaches through intensified parallelism the behavior that characterizes and produces a broken heart and contrite spirit. In terms of the progression through the geography of the temple, this parallelism moves the speaker from standing at the gates and answering the gatekeeper's requirements to walking forward on the Lord's way. In verse 33, this motion continues along a path that only the Lord can provide. Thy righteousness, my righteousness. Distinct from the parallel phrases, gates of thy righteousness and robes of thy righteousness, 2 Nephi 4:35 declares God as the rock of my righteousness. This last expression recognizes Jesus as the source of Nephi's righteousness. Christological debates have raged over imputed versus infused righteousness, and the semantic unit thy righteousness favors the former. Jesus as the source of Nephi's uprightness could support either understanding. Consider that rock of my righteousness is distinct from the two phrases that indicate imputation, and considering the context of the entire Book of Mormon, Amulek taught the Lord should not come to redeem them in their sins, but to redeem them from their sins, Helaman 5:10. I prefer to read rock of my righteousness as infusion. More significantly, Nephi doesn't address those theological issues. Instead, he outlines his physical and spiritual approach to God's presence. Having covenanted with the Lord and entered the Lord's presence, Nephi's righteousness is wholly dependent on Christ and is portrayed as the result of a specific kind of journey. As noted earlier, Nephi replaces clean hands and a pure heart with a cital inversion of a verse from a penitential psalm. The sacrifices of God are a broken heart, spirit, a broken and a contrite heart, Psalm 51:17. Gunkel regarded this psalm as reflecting the shift in religion from cultic acts to personal piety. Thus, Nephi's qualifications for entering through the gates consist of a penitent reliance on Christ and faithful obedience within his covenantal relationship, rather than reliance on ritual purity or morality. This psalm is at once deeply personal and deeply tied to temple ritual. Conclusion and implications. This article demonstrates that explicit temple imagery in 2 Nephi 4:32 to 35 frames Nephi's movement from the outer court of the temple to the inner court, then to the holy place, and finally to the Holy of Holies. Nephi draws progressively closer to God's presence. The thematic and rhetorical crescendo of holiness that accompanies the psalmist's progression reflects the biblical poetic technique of intensification and reduces the likelihood that the author haphazardly strung together biblical phrases. The saying, gates of hell, gates of righteousness, contrite spirit and a broken heart, and robe of righteousness were deployed and refined in an ordered, deliberate, and coherent manner. The rhetorical intensification focuses the reader on the personal covenantal relationship between Christ and Nephi, which is the source of Nephi's trust and hope. Additionally, this article adds to the vast corpus demonstrating that the Book of Mormon authors possessed a sophisticated command of Hebrew literary conventions. These conclusions affirm the Book of Mormon as truly a work and a marvelous work and a wonder. Nelson Chung graduated from Brigham Young University, where he double majored in economics and political science and minored in computing. He received his master's degree in applied and computational mathematics at Johns Hopkins University and studied Hebrew under Dan McClellan when it was still free. He works for the United States Census Bureau as a statistician. His article, The Brigham Young University Football Program and the Analytics Revolution, was among BYU Study Quarterly's more popular articles. His hobbies include working out, though he doesn't consider himself a gym bro, biking, batting cages, and international travel. This has been a recording of progressing through the gradations of holiness in the temple. 2 Nephi 4:32-35 as a hymn inspired by ritual by Nelson Chung, published in Interpreter, a journal of Latter-day Saint faith and scholarship, volume 69, 2026, read by the author. This audio recording is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license and may be freely distributed if it remains unchanged. The journal and its website are credited and is for non-commercial use. A printable version of this article, along with a wide array of additional resources, can be found at interpreterfoundation.org.